Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the COVID-19 call for self-advocates. I would now like to introduce Ross Chilton, CEO of Community Living BC. Please go ahead.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and great to have you join us from all across the province today. Hopefully it's improving weather for you. It's a little bit better for us here today at Airport Square. So I would like to begin by acknowledging with gratitude that the lands from which we're calling in today are Indigenous traditional territories. I am calling in today from the traditional territories of the Coast Salish peoples and the Musqueam First Nation. So what we heard from self-advocates is it was a desire to have a question and answer session just with Dr. Bain Smith. And so that's what we've been able to arrange with the doctor today. I will acknowledge that we did receive some questions from families and other caregivers, but today we're honoring the requests of self-advocates that the questions will strictly be those that are self-advocate questions. We will be announcing soon another session where we will again invite Dr. Bain Smith back to be able to answer some of the health-related questions that families have as well. But for today, the focus will be on self-advocates. So these are questions that were sent to us by email or gathered from other self-advocate groups across the province. And so, Dr. Bain Smith, I think if you're ready, we're going to jump right into the questions.
Sounds good.
Okay. And if there's time at the end, what we'll maybe do is ask you to kind of give us a bit of an update at the end of the call. But start with the questions. So the first ones is sort of people, again, trying to understand a little bit about COVID-19. And the first question is, I'm wondering how many people get COVID-19. And I don't know if that means sort of overall in the province, how many have got it or going to get it or we anticipate will get it, or out of a certain number of people, how many will get it? But that was sort of our first question.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Ross. Good afternoon, everybody. And I will, just before I begin answering the questions, I will also acknowledge I'm very grateful to be calling in from my home on the territories of the Lekwungen peoples, of the Songhees and the Squamish Nations. For those that I haven't met on the call, which is many of you, I am Echo Dene from Fort Nelson First Nation, and I'm French Canadian and Métis from the Red River Valley, and I'm very grateful to work for Dr. Henry as her Deputy Provincial Health Officer for Indigenous Health. And I just want to say also thank you to everybody on the call and for all the excellent questions that you've asked. These are just, yeah, really, really good, important questions, and I'm excited to go through many of them with you. So in terms of how many people get COVID-19, maybe I'll just start by saying that, COVID-19 is caused by a virus called the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And we first emerged in Wuhan province sometime in the fall. We became aware of it around December, really, and then was called a global pandemic because it had spread across the world so widely in early 2020. And so there's actually a website on the Johns Hopkins Public Health Center for System Science and Engineering that gives us an up-to-date tally of all of the COVID-19 cases in the world, actually. So I'm just looking at it now, and as of today, the total confirmed number of cases is just over 8 million people that have tested positive for COVID-19. In terms of our BC data, as of June 12th, the weekly report was we had close to 2,700 people who had tested positive for COVID-19. How long will it go on for was another question around COVID-19. And that one's a little bit harder to answer because there's a few different factors. Right now, we call this a global pandemic, and it's causing so much disruption because this is a new virus for humans, which means that because it's new, none of us had ever seen it before. Our immune systems had never seen this virus before, which means that everybody that gets or we believe most people that get exposed to the virus will get sick from it. That's a little different than other viruses, common cold viruses that have been around and that we've had previously. So that means that, if we all got exposed to a common cold virus, some of us would not get sick because our immune system had already seen it and remembered it and would be able to mount a response that would prevent us from actually getting sick. With COVID-19, that's not the case. We can't rely on people's immune systems to remember this virus because they wouldn't. It's new. So I'm giving that little bit of background because it's complicated in terms of how long will it go on for. Basically, it's going to go on for as long as it takes for enough people's immune systems to learn COVID-19 and be able to respond to it. So there's two ways that your immune system can learn to respond to COVID-19. One is for you to see the actual virus, so meaning you actually get COVID-19 and you get sick, and then your immune system remembers that virus, and you may not get sick if you see it again. The second way is through a vaccine. So vaccines work by introducing a little bit of a virus through an injection usually. And then your immune system learns that virus, learns how to respond to it, and prevents us from getting sick if we see that virus in the future. So things like the measles vaccine and the chickenpox vaccine, that's how they work. So the really big unknown factor right now is when will we know or discover a vaccine that works for COVID-19? So when will the scientists develop a vaccine that that can prevent COVID-19 illness? And then the second part of that is when will manufacturers be able to produce enough of that vaccine to share it and distribute it around the world so that people have access to it. So those are questions that nobody has an answer to right now, but our best guess from the experts, and Dr. Henry is tapped in with all of those different experts, is we think it probably will take a year and a half, 2 years to get to that point. So I don't have a crystal ball on that, but that's kind of the time frame that we're planning for right now.
That's great. And one of the things I think you've been very aware of is that as we tried to prevent as much of the transmission as possible, we were asking people to physically distance and in some cases self-isolate. So a number of the questions are related to kind of getting back to things that are important to people. And one of them is, when can we go for walks outside with our immediate family members, or when can we go shopping or for a short drive with those immediate family members?
That's great. Thank you so much. Such a good question. And so before I jump into those answers, I think it's helpful to think about exactly as you were just saying, Ross, is how might somebody catch COVID-19? Because that's a really important thing to think about, because it really informs and guides all of the different recommendations and the choices that people make. So I mentioned that COVID-19 is caused by this new virus called the SARS-CoV-19 virus. The way that this virus spreads is through infected droplets. So if somebody gets COVID-19, the virus will start multiplying in their body and they get sick. Then the virus can get into their droplets. So that means when they're breathing or sneezing or coughing, they are coughing out little droplets that have the virus in it. If they're standing close enough to somebody, so within two adult arm lengths, the droplets can actually travel up to two adult arm lengths when somebody coughs or sneezes. So if that infected droplet were to travel and get inhaled by somebody who is in that that range of distance, then that person could get infected with COVID-19. So that's why you've heard so much about physical distancing and staying 2 meters or two adult arm lengths away from other people, is because that's how far infected droplets can travel. So as long as you're staying that far away from other people, then your risk of inhaling infected droplets from somebody who's sick is very, very small. The other way you can imagine that this virus gets spread is if somebody is sick and has the COVID-19 virus in their droplets and they cough, say they cough into their hand and then they touch a doorknob or a light switch, they might leave some of that infected droplet residue behind. And then if you came into that same room or walked into that space and touched any of those surfaces that had the droplets on it, and then touched your eyes or your nose or your mouth, that's the other way that the virus can get into your body and cause you to get sick. So that's what we call the chain of transmission. And so all of the recommendations that have been coming out from Dr. Henry in public health are all about different ways that we can break the chain of transmission. So one of the important pieces is staying away from others if we're sick. So we're really encouraging people who are having symptoms of a cold or symptoms that are similar to COVID-19 to stay away from others so they're not spreading infected droplets into spaces where it might infect other people. The other piece is we're encouraging and advising people to stay 2 meters away from people who are outside of their immediate family or the people that they live with. And again, this is to prevent infected droplets from being exchanged between people. So if you're at that 2 meter distance or greater, the risk of you getting infected droplets goes way down. And then the third piece is doing lots of cleaning and disinfection of surfaces that you might touch or public surfaces. That way you're less likely to pick up infected droplets. And then the final piece is doing that frequent hand hygiene, so cleaning and washing your hands often, so that if you did by accident pick up infected droplets somewhere out in the world, that if you're cleaning your hands often, then you're not going to pass those infected droplets onto your face, and that helps prevent people from getting sick. So I just wanted to give all of that background because I think that's so important to understanding all of the different recommendations that have been made. And really, it's those things that people have been doing that have made such a big difference here in BC in terms of how quickly we were able to bring our number of cases of COVID-19 down to a very low level. So going back to the question about going out with family members, when can somebody go for walks outside with immediate family members? That can happen right now. So being outside is actually really an excellent thing in terms of COVID-19 because when you're outside, you can keep more distance from people. So you still want to stay, more than two adult arm lengths away from people outside of your family. So for the people that you're living with in your household, obviously those people, provided nobody's sick in the household, you can just be in, normal contact. But when you go outside, you still want to try and stay 2 meters away from other people. Being outside is really, really a good thing for COVID-19 because COVID-19 doesn't survive very well when outside. So it gets killed by the sunlight. The wind helps to blow it away. So we definitely encourage people to do things outside. And then again, when can one go shopping or for a short drive with immediate family members? Again, we would say those are things that can potentially be happening now. But I will say that what we've learned about COVID-19 is that some people are at higher risk of getting very, very sick from COVID-19, and some people are at higher risk of actually dying of COVID-19 than others. And so the people that are in that higher risk group are those who are elderly. So in BC, we've seen that people who are over the age of 65 have a much higher risk of dying of COVID-19 than people who are younger. We also know that people who have other chronic medical conditions like heart conditions, lung conditions, immune system conditions are also at higher risk. And when you put those two things together, so for example, somebody who's over the age of 65 and has chronic health conditions, those people are at particularly high risk of getting very sick from COVID-19 if they catch it. So I would say that in terms of going out shopping or just being out in the world a bit more, if you're in one of those higher risk groups, then you may choose to not go into public spaces right now or still stay very close to home or in a small limit the number of people that you come in contact with. Whereas people who are younger and don't have other health conditions, certainly now is a time that people are doing a little bit more out in the world. It's important to note that as BC has opened up, I'm putting quotation marks around that, as we've increased the number of services that are available, that's happened with directions and recommendations and guidance from WorkSafe BC about how to reopen services, for example, hairdressers and salons, how they can reopen their services in a way that helps to keep the risk of spreading COVID-19 low. So that includes putting up those plexiglass barriers and having cues to remind people how to stay 2 meters away from everybody else. So you may have seen those as like strips of tape on a floor that tell people where to stand to keep their distance. So those are some of the different considerations. So it is allowed for people to go out and shop or go for short drives. But we are, encouraging people to think through, what their risk of getting severe COVID-19 might be. And if it seems like they're in a higher risk group because they're older or have other health conditions, then we're encouraging or recommending that maybe they still stay in a fairly small, closer to home circle so that their risk of picking up COVID-19 is still pretty low.
That's great. And I guess, the option for those that aren't sure if they're at greater risk or not is that they could always arrange a phone appointment with their family doctor.
Yes. Excellent point. Yes. Thank you, Ross.
So, you know, there's of course been lots of talk about masks, and so we have some questions around that, around whether people need to wear them, because, and I think you've heard this on other calls with disability advocates, that there's many people can't wear masks due to sensory issues, asthma, breathing problems, anxiety, you know, risk of a panic attack, and some others need to be able to have their lips read in terms of when they're communicating by somebody who can't hear them. So the questions are kind of related to the mandatory use of masks. So do we have to wear them? And, of course, a couple of good examples are brought up. The BC Ferries, I think it was yesterday, and BC Transit and some other businesses are asking everyone to wear a mask. And does that mean that the transit and the ferry and those kinds of stores are places that can refuse access to those people who, for the reasons we just talked about, aren't really able to wear a mask?
Yes, thank you, Ross. This is such an excellent question. And so I'll begin by saying that Dr. Henry has been very clear in her public direction and her media, and her stance is that masks are recommended in situations where people can't consistently stay 2 meters away from one another. So for the example on transit, it may not be possible for everybody to maintain that full physical distancing. And so in those types of scenarios, if most people are wearing a face covering, that may help to keep their infected droplets in. Wearing a mask does not protect the person who's wearing the mask from getting COVID-19, but it might help prevent somebody who's got infected droplets from spreading them to other people. It's really important that if somebody is wearing a mask, that they're still doing as much physical distancing as they can, meaning that they're staying 2 adult arm lengths away from people as much as they can, and that they're doing lots of hand washing. Those two things are far, far, far more effective at reducing the spread of COVID-19 than just wearing a face covering. Because of that, because wearing a face covering might be a little bit helpful, but isn't the main thing that keeps people from spreading and or catching COVID-19, that's why the stance that's been taken is that it's okay to wear a mask, and it might even be recommended in certain situations where people can't maintain physical distancing. However, Dr. Henry has been very, very clear that it is not required. So we do not have the evidence or the science to say that it's effective enough that it should be required. So the answer to the question, do we have to wear a mask? No. Dr. Henry has said in her media on several occasions that there are a number of people who cannot wear masks for a lot of different reasons, and so that's why they are not required for everybody. And we, because of that, we do not think that anybody should be refused access to a service simply because they cannot wear a mask. One thing that we've seen throughout the COVID-19 crisis is that sometimes, out of the best of intentions, people have gone above and beyond the public health recommendations. And so specifically around the issue of masks, this has been one of our concerns, is that people might start requiring masks, different shops or services, or people might experience discrimination or stigmatization if they are not wearing a mask and other people think that they should be. So we're really open to and want to hear through Ross and other organizations if people are having trouble or they're experiencing barriers because of not being able to wear a mask. We really want to hear about that because that's not the intention of the recommendations. The recommendations are there because wearing a mask or a face covering might prevent the spread of infected droplets, but physical distancing and frequent hand hygiene are far more effective, so we want people to be doing that, and masks are not required.
That's great, and you know, it reminds me of some advice you gave on an earlier call where we have to be careful too when we're wearing a mask that we don't think that we're protected in a way that we're not, because we can almost let our guard down and start to do things that are going to put us at risk, and that mask just won't provide that protection. It reminds me of when you get a snowstorm and you see all these SUVs sliding off the road because they think they can drive past because they have an SUV, but they're still driving on rubber tires on an icy road, and they should still be cautious.
Yes, absolutely. And I have to say, the grocery store that I go to, they've started asking people to wear a mask. And so, I don't have any breathing difficulties or anything. So I can wear a mask and I've done that, at the store. But absolutely, even as somebody who is working in this day in, day out, the first time I put that mask on, I did feel different. Like I thought, oh, it's like, it does feel like a physical protection. So even in my own mind, I had to remind myself, like, no, I'm doing this for others, and I still really need to keep my distance and do the hand washing. So the other thing I would just say is that if people are choosing to wear masks, it's really important that you wash your hands before you put the mask on so that you don't, by accident, contaminate yourself, because putting a mask on means that you're touching your face. The other thing is when you're taking the mask off, it's the same thing. You need to wash your hands before you take the mask off. And then once you've taken the mask off, you need to wash your hands again. So just a couple of other important pieces about wearing a mask.
That's great. And I know you've said before, and it's been quite reassuring to me and to others, is that we have learned a lot already about this virus. But one of the things that keeps coming up is the talk of a second wave. And so the questions relate to, many of us are afraid of all the second wave talk. What do we need to look out for? How will we know if the second wave is here? And what can we do to prepare and feel safe?
Yes. Thank you so much. And this is such a great question. So the second wave refers to, as the name describes, is a second wave of increased numbers of cases of whatever the virus is that's causing the pandemic. And in the history of pandemics, there always has been a second spike or peak of cases of the virus. Part of what we're, what do we need to look out for? Well, it's actually the public health leaders that are on the lookout for that second wave, and we're looking for it in the data. So right now we're doing lots of COVID-19 testing. We've got lots of testing capacity right now. And so we've got that messaging out to the public that if you're feeling sick, please go out and get a COVID-19 test, or reach out to your testing center. In some cases, if somebody's unable to leave the house for whatever reason, there have been cases where the nurse has actually been able to go out and do the test in the home. So I just want people to know about that. But that's how the public health leaders are looking for the second wave, is we're monitoring our daily cases of COVID-19. And we know that a second wave is starting when we see the number of cases climbing again. So that's how we'll know that a second wave is here. The other piece of the second wave really has to do with the influenza season. So we know that viruses follow a seasonal pattern, and the seasonal pattern coincides with our winter months. And this makes a lot of sense. Again, I was just saying that actually being outside is a really good thing from a virus perspective, because it's hard for viruses to stay alive outside, and we've got more distance from one another, and so it's harder to pass viruses from one person to another when we're outside. In the winter months, we see spikes in colds and viruses because we're spending more time indoors, we're in closer proximity with people, and so those are all the right conditions for spreading viruses more quickly. So we expect that we will likely see a second wave of COVID-19 in the fall that will coincide with our regular influenza season. That's when that usually starts. What can we do to prepare and feel safe? Well, one thing is that I think we can all feel really, really grateful that we live where we do in British Columbia, where we have a really exceptional provincial health officer in Dr. Henry. She's supported by a really incredible team of chief medical health officers at our five regional health authorities and First Nations health authority. So she's got an amazing team there. We've got some excellent health leaders as well in Minister Dix, and a really strong premier who I think has allowed the public health leaders to do the work that they've needed to do and provide the recommendations to the public to help us, for all of us, to do our part in terms of keeping the number of COVID-19 cases low. So I think what we can do just generally in the public to prepare and feel safe is to stay tuned in to those regular media briefings so that we know what's happening in our area and with COVID-19 in BC. And as, you know, the public health leaders and officials, if they see clusters or see the COVID-19 cases climbing again, we'll speak out to the public in the same way that Dr. Henry did in March and said, okay, we need to, start doing all of these other things, such as the physical distancing and limiting our mass gatherings and washing hands more frequently to try and decrease the spread of the virus. So we may see some of that messaging coming out more strongly again in the fall. That said, Dr. Henry's been really, really committed to reopening BC and providing guidance in that way so that we can keep moving forward rather than going backward. So she's been really, really following the evidence and the data here in BC to guide those recommendations. And so we're cautiously optimistic that we've got the right systems for communication and testing and the structures in place to help us sort of go through a second wave in hopefully as effective a response as we did with the first wave, because we were, I'm not sure how closely you were following the media in March and early April, but BC, compared to other provinces in Canada and certainly to other places in the world, we actually did a really amazing job. And I'm stressing the we, because it was really the fact that we were able to see a small first peak and get our case count so low in BC in a relatively short period of time really was as a result of so many people across the province taking the advice and recommendations of Dr. Henry and Minister Dix to heart and really following them. So we really did do that together. And so I'm quite, optimistic that as we go into the fall flu season and are anticipating a second wave, that we'll be able to weather that storm together again.
Yeah, that's great. And I think it's why it's so important. And it's reflected in some of the earlier questions that to the extent that people can do it safely, we need to get back to doing things that bring us kind of physical and emotional health. Because if we are going to find ourselves in a second wave in the fall, we'll want to have had those chances to spend time with family, to spend time outdoors, enjoy life. And that way we'll be ready for sort of the hard parts of that isolation that occurs if there's needing to go back to stage one. But I can see there could be a temptation to just say, well, I'll just stay locked down until we're completely through this. But if you're an otherwise healthy person, that's probably not good advice because you're going to end up being in that state potentially for quite a long time.
Yes, that's absolutely right, Ross. And I didn't say this at the beginning of the call, and I probably should. And hopefully if people have been on other calls that I've been on, then you've heard me say this before, but the overarching goals of getting through COVID-19 are to protect those who are most vulnerable to severe COVID-19. And we've talked about that today. That's people who are older and people with chronic health conditions. That's our first goal. Our second goal is to keep our healthcare system running and functional, so making sure that it doesn't get overwhelmed if there's a really huge spike in number of people with COVID-19. And if you are following the news, you will have seen that happen in places like Italy and New York, and I understand, maybe happening now in Brazil. And then our third goal has been to minimize the harms, the negative consequences of living with such extreme public health recommendations as we've had. And so you've just mentioned, Ross, that this has really taken its toll on people's mental, emotional, physical, spiritual health. And when I say this, I mean the fear of COVID-19, the lockdowns, in quotation marks, the disruption to our regular activities and routines, the disruption to our social connections. And so we know that we really need to balance those first two goals against that third goal. And so we know that, this period of opening up a little bit and reconnecting and expanding our social activities in ways that are safe still or safer. So doing the things that keep those activities safer with lots of hand washing and keeping our distance. Those are all really important things to promote our physical, spiritual, emotional, and mental health.
That's great. And the other sort of series of questions relates to all those important things that we normally take part in and rely on, like things like going to the dentist or going to get our hearing tested. And one of the self-advocates asked the question, I don't understand the rules about going to the dentist. I've heard if you have diabetes, you can't go. Is that true? So is there any kind of guidance people should have in terms of making decisions around when to return to the dentist?
Yeah, so thank you. That was an interesting one. I haven't heard that, so I don't believe that's true. I think that the dentists are all reopening at their own sort of pace and scale. They have guidance documents from WorkSafe BC that outline the different pieces that they should put in place in order to keep the risk of their clients catching or spreading COVID-19 low. Again, this is one of those ones where there's not really a clear-cut black and white answer for everybody, because each individual's risk of severe COVID-19 is different. So you may, you know, need to sort of think that through on an individual level. So if you're somebody who's older and very frail with a number of different health conditions, now might not be the time to go for example, just a routine teeth cleaning. But you know, if you're still that same person with maybe higher risk of severe COVID-19, but you get a really bad tooth infection or an abscess, then absolutely, then that would warrant going to the dentist. So I think it's really a bit of an individual decision point about when you go back to see the dentist. And hopefully that's something that you can call into your dentist's office and find out how they, if they've restarted their practice, and if so, you know, how you can book an appointment and all the different pieces that they're doing and that you can do to help make that visit as safe from a COVID-19 perspective as possible. And then the question about hearing aid testing, I was so happy to see that one, because I actually had to go for a hearing test yesterday. I went into my local hearing aid shop for a regular hearing test, and so I went in. They had the plexiglass barrier up at the reception. They asked me to wear a face covering. They had hand sanitizer available. They had the door locked and were doing things by appointment only to limit the number of people in the space at any given time. My hearing technician wore a mask and a face shield and gloves and did lots of hand washing as well. So absolutely, hearing aids, hearing clinics are open again and are following those WorkSafe BC guidelines. And so absolutely, I think now is the time to just start calling or connecting with those local healthcare practitioners and just talking through your individual situation and whether or not it makes sense for you to come in for that service and how you can do that as safely as possible. And I know there's a lot of different pieces of information out in the world, and you know, COVID-19 has been really dynamic because it's new and we're learning more about it every day. And so that's been challenging for people as well, because we might say something one day in the media and then the next day it might be a slightly different message because we've learned something new that we're adding in. So in terms of finding the most up-to-date information on what you can do and can't do and what's open and what's not, I would direct you to two important websites. So the first would be the WorkSafe BC website, and they have a number of different pages about COVID-19 and lots of different guidance documents. And every business that's reopening right now is required to have a COVID-19 safety plan that's posted. So any place you want to go, you can ask to see their COVID-19 safety plan so that you know exactly what they're doing to help keep you safe and keep their employees safe when using that service. The other website that's really important is the BC CDC, the BC Center for Disease Control, which has all the up-to-date information about COVID-19 in BC, has all the data, but also has a number of different pages that are really helpful around how you can access testing, what are the symptoms of COVID-19, any question really that you have about COVID-19 can be answered on that BC CDC website. I apologize. I know I'm giving really wordy answers, and I see that we still have a number of important questions. So I'll stop there.
That's great. And what we'll do is we'll provide links on our website to those different resources, because they are very important. And, you know, as you talk, it reminds me, we are in such better place now than we were in early March. You know, I would agree. I had to go get some treatment for my neck, and I was very impressed from start to finish about how clear they were about what I needed to do, what the person that was helping me needed to do, and I felt that I wasn't putting them at risk of getting sick, and they weren't putting me at risk of getting sick. And I think that this is also an important message, because while it's not a question that self-advocates have asked, I do worry about just people in general avoiding seeking help when they actually need it. You know, we hear about kind of emergency visits being way down, and just the worry that if somebody really needs to go to emergency right now, they probably should go to emergency and not avoid it just because of fear around COVID.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, 100%. We know that, routine care has been disrupted, and emergency care, as you mentioned. So, it's really, really important that people, don't neglect those other pieces of their healthcare, because that's, just because COVID-19 hit doesn't mean that all those other, health conditions went away. So we do need to be dealing with all of those different pieces to support people's health and wellness.
Yeah, so it's great that we have more information and we have more people that can provide guidance if somebody's not sure if they should do something, as you say, to contact their dentist or their hearing aid specialist, or you know, to check with their doctor around their health, because we want, as you said, as many people to come out of this with good health as possible. The other thing that I think is starting to change, and I'm hoping you're going to agree, is in regards to the personal protective equipment. So the question is why is there not enough protection gear out there, like masks and gloves and hand sanitizers, to go around for all of BC?
Oh, I know. And this has been one of the hardest topics that I've had to speak to on many, many calls over the last few months. But unfortunately, the harsh reality is that because this is a global pandemic, meaning that every part of the world is affected, the demand for masks, gloves, and hand sanitizer around the world has just been exceeding the supply of those things. And so BC has worked really, really hard in collaboration with the federal government to increase the supply chains coming into the province, but it's been a struggle. And we're still not there yet in terms of having, the supply that would make us feel really good and confident, and to have enough to go around all of BC. So it's just unfortunately a harsh reality of this global nature of the pandemic. But there's been so much effort that's gone into this, and looking at all kinds of creative solutions, and certainly thinking forward towards the fall and that potential second wave that, you know, here in Canada, they've worked to increase the manufacturing capacity, work to create stronger supply chains with manufacturers outside of Canada, but we're still not there yet, unfortunately.
And it's so great that that you and Dr. Henry have emphasized the other strategies. You know, I think I haven't had a cold in a very long time, and normally I think by this time of year I would have had one. But I think it's because of all the hand washing and physical distancing and kind of being, you know, trying not to touch my face too much. I probably haven't caught just the common cold or passed on the common cold. So these are all important strategies that we need to keep up. And it's masks aren't sort of the answer, except for some situations. So I think we'll kind of go with the last question because I am aware of the time. And, you know, as you know, Dr. Bain-Smith, many of our elders were quite at risk in terms of long-term care once the virus had kind of gotten into some long-term care residences. And sadly, many of them passed away. And the question is, are there the same kinds of risks for people who live in group homes and home share where more than one person is supported in that home?
Yeah, this is such an important question. And so if we go back to thinking about the basics of COVID-19 and the basics of the spread of COVID-19, there's basically two factors that determine that risk of spreading COVID-19. And so one is the number of individuals that people come in contact with. So the more people you come in contact with, the greater the risk is that you, that one of them will be infected and could pass the virus on to you. The second factor is how intense that contact is. That's the language we use, intense, meaning how close are you to that person or to those people and for how long? So the more people you're in contact with, and if you're in contact with those people at a closer distance and for longer periods of time, those are two things that will really increase the risk of you catching COVID-19. So when we think about long-term residences, the risk of catching COVID-19 or spreading it is increased in BC because some of those long-term care residents can have 100, 200 residents and then, many, many different staff that are coming and going. So that's lots of different people in contact. Again, the contact intensity in those settings is quite close. Because these are settings with, very elderly, very frail people who need a lot of direct personal contact. It's also a group that's at very high risk for severe COVID-19. And we've definitely seen that of the approximately 50 outbreaks in long-term care facilities, those have been really the main drivers of the deaths in COVID-19. The average or median age of person who's died in BC from COVID-19 is 85. So we know that it's really people who are older who have unfortunately died from COVID-19 here in BC. If we compare that to group home settings, it's different for a couple of reasons. One is that group homes in BC are not those big settings of 100 or 200 people. My understanding is that they're typically quite a bit smaller, more in the 5 to 6 people range, some that might be a little bit bigger than that, 10 to 12. So right there, you've brought the risk down quite a bit. The other piece is that the contact intensity, some of those individuals in the group homes will require, that very close personal care. But I also know that there's procedures that have been put into place to really help limit the numbers of different staff coming in and also promoting that hand hygiene before and after care and all those different pieces that help reduce the spread of the virus. So I would say that group homes, yes, when you have, the more people that you have coming together, the more the risk of COVID-19 grows. But if we try and compare and contrast group homes in BC with long-term care facilities in BC, we see that the long-term care facilities are much larger numbers. The people that are in long-term care are much older and more frail, and so those are much higher risk settings than group homes.
Yeah, thanks so much for that. It's always kind of trying to understand, you know, what to be worried about, how worried to be, what we can do, and I think the call again today has been an excellent opportunity for self-advocates to put questions to you and get your answers in very understandable terms. So Dr. Bainsmith, I want to thank you for that, for not just providing great information, but information that's so understandable. And I just want to remind the self-advocates that were on the call that if there's other individuals that you would think could benefit from listening to this, the call has been recorded and will be put on the CLBC website. But otherwise, thank you, Dr. Bainsmith. It's great again to have had time with you, and I wish every self-advocate a great day.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having me, and it was lovely to be here. Thanks, Ross.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you, and ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the COVID-19 call for self-advocates. Thank you for your participation, and have a nice day.